I've been reading consecutively from Canto, or through now, Canto 3 and Chapter 3, and I'm up to text number 10. This is Uddhava speaking to Vidura. Do a little background. Back to go. In the first canto, Uddhava, or Vidura rather, left Hastinapur. He was, his services were no longer needed in Hastinapur. He tried in every way to relieve Duryodhana of his envious nature, and he was unsuccessful. So he left and went on pilgrimage. And after, we hear, after his pilgrimage, he returned back to Hastinapur and delivered to Dhritarashtra. So, so many things are narrated, but with the third canto opens with the sages of Navisharanya saying, wow, when Vidura was on pilgrimage, he met Maitreya. And Maitreya is so qualified. And Vidura is so qualified. They must have had wonderful topics that they exchanged with one another. Can you tell what those topics were that they exchanged? And the pilgrimage that he went, he must have experienced many wonderful things. Can you describe his pilgrimage? And so, he describes the pilgrimage, then he meets Uddhava. Even before he meets Maitreya, he meets Uddhava. And Uddhava happens to be in a forest in Vrindavan, because that's where Uddhava met Krishna. Not for the first time, but Krishna left. Krishna told Uddhava, my pastimes are over. I'm going to return to the spiritual world. And when I leave, Kali Yuga is going to begin. And when Kali Yuga begins, it's very bad. And I don't want you to have to experience Kali Yuga in its very bad condition. So I want you to go to the north and take the association of the devotees of Naranarayan Rishi. Because when you stay in the association of devotees, even at Kali Yuga, you'll be okay. Go there. So, Uddhava didn't want to leave Krishna, but Krishna told him to go. So he went. Well, at least he started to go. But he couldn't bear Krishna's separation, so he went back to Dwarka. When he went back to Dwarka, Krishna was gone. Krishna had left. At least he had left Dwarka. So Uddhava was like the gopis searching for Krishna. Where did he go? He went searching everywhere, like a madman, searching for Krishna. And he found Krishna in a forest by the bank of the river Jamuna, reclining on the roots of a tree, leaning back on the tree with his long arms extended down to his knees, and just a beautiful scene, and Uddhava went running and paid his obeisances before Krishna. And he heard Uddhava Gita. And after Uddhava Gita was spoken, Krishna said, I have to go now. And Krishna left. Shortly after Krishna left is when Vidura found Uddhava in the forest. And when he found Uddhava in the forest, he was so happy. A dear friend of Krishna here in the forest. How wonderful. And naturally he wanted to talk about Krishna, because Uddhava has been so intimately associated with Krishna since way back. Most confidential associate of Krishna. We're going to hear a little bit about that this evening, or even more, from this verse. So he starts asking about how are Krishna and Balaram, and how is Devaki, and all the personalities, many of the personalities in Dwarka. And he knows the whole Yadu dynasty, because he went to Prabhas Kshetra on pilgrimage. He already knew that they've already gone. But he didn't want to say that. So he was asking, how are they? What is their welfare? How are they doing? Because he didn't want to say, oh, they're gone. But Uddhava knew that they were gone. And so Uddhava's reply, it's very moving. It's packed with his feelings of separation from Krishna. He says so many amazing things. Mainly the theme of them is his deep feelings of separation from Krishna. So rather than review all of those deep feelings, you can read them sometime. After he speaks those words, he says that you asked about Krishna. And that in that series is this very wonderful verse. Who can be a better master than Krishna? Even one who tried to kill him by poisoning him, Putana, because there was a little motherly affection, Krishna liberated her and gave her an eternal position in the spiritual world as the maidservant of Mother Yashoda, who would then serve you in maternal affection, serve Krishna in maternal affection. Who could have a better master than that? But he goes through a little cameo-like expressions of Krishna's pastimes. Not at all comprehensive, just like a little chronological, almost chronological. First it starts in Vrindavan, in the appearance in the prison house of Kamsa, and the childhood pastimes in Braja. And then he leaves Braja. So where we are here up to now, he's went to Dwarka, and before going to Dwarka, the killing of Kaliyavana, and then Jarasandha chasing him up a mountain, and Krishna Balaram jumping off the mountain, and then going back to Dwarka. Krishna's marriage with Rukmini, which happened shortly after he went back to Dwarka. He received news that from a messenger. Anyway, without retelling the whole story. He married Rukmini, he married Satya, Jambavati, Satyabhama. He killed Narakasura and the Mura demon because he was requested by Indra. Narakasura came and stole Aditi's earrings. His mother and the mother of Lord Vamana. And he stole Vamana's umbrella, his white umbrella. And he stole the whole mountain.
Please help us.
So Krishna went and destroyed Narakasura, and the mother of Narakasura, Prithvi, or Bhumi, Mother Earth, she gave back the stolen items. Krishna returned the stolen items. All this is discussed in little cameo form, little snapshot forms. And Satyabhama was with him. And Satyabhama saw the Parijata tree and said, "Oh, can you bring back the Parijata tree? We can have one in our yard." In Dwarka. So Krishna asked Indra, "Can we have a Parijata tree, please?" "Oh, no, you can't have a Parijata tree." Krishna said, "Well, then I'll just take one." So Krishna took one. And the wives of Indra,
"You can't let him take Parijata tree, that's for heaven only, and stop him."
So Krishna had a little battle with Indra. Yes. This is after Indra had his little boo-boo with, you know, sending torrents of rain to kill all the and Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, and he had this, you know, eureka. He's not just a little boy, he's the personality. This is after that. Much after that. Indra has a short memory. So Krishna defeated Indra, took the Parijata tree. And then came, so then he married the 16,100 wives, and so far the eight other wives are also mentioned briefly, succinctly. The wrestling of the bulls, the seven bulls, by expanding seven forms. Those are all described. Now, text 10. Kaliyavana. It was described earlier, but he's repeating it again because it's part of a threefold message. Kaliyavana, the king of Magadha and Shalva, attacked the city of Mathura. But when the city was encircled by their soldiers, the Lord refrained from killing them personally, just to show the power of his own men. Purport. So this is, he's combining several leelas into one verse, to describe one of Krishna's glories. Purport. After the death of Kamsa, when Mathura was encircled by the soldiers of Kaliyavana, Jarasandha, and Shalva, the Lord seemingly fled from the city, and thus he is known as Ranchor, or one who fled from fighting. Actually, the fact was that the Lord wanted to kill them through the agency of his own men, devotees like Muchukunda and Bhima. Kaliyavana and the king of Magadha were killed by Muchukunda and Bhima respectively, who acted as agents of the Lord. By such acts, the Lord wanted to exhibit the prowess of his devotees, as if he were personally unable to fight but his devotees could kill them. The relationship of the Lord with his devotees is a very happy one. Actually, the Lord descended at the request of Brahma in order to kill all the undesirables of the world. But to divide the share of glory, he sometimes engaged his devotees to take the credit. Battle Kurukshetra was designed by the Lord himself. But just to give credit to his devotee, Arjuna, Nimittamatram Bhagavasavyasachin, he played the part of the charioteer, while Arjuna was given the chance to play the fighter, and thus become the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra. What he wants to do himself by his transcendental plans, he executes through his confidential devotees. That is the way of the Lord's mercy towards his pure, unalloyed devotees. So I'll summarize a little bit, but then I thought it would be nice just to read from Mahabharata. That's, you know, in the evening reading Mahabharata is very nice. And when you hear this nice description, you'll agree. So, who is Kaliyavana? He's the king of the Yavana dynasty in the north country. I forget the description exactly where, but somewhere up in that place that the United States is doing battles with those countries in that territory. I forget which area. Maybe even it's Turkey. Anyway, Yavana territory, up there somewhere, Middle East somewhere. Very powerful. And he was trying to find out who's the suitable match. So he went here and there, and he was told, Krishna, he's the only one that is worth fighting with you. So you're so powerful. So Jarasandha, after being defeated 17 times, decided for number 18 that he would make an alliance with Kaliyavana. And the plan was that Kaliyavana thought, that's a great idea. I had this idea that, so now we'll both go find him. Great. So you'll come from this direction, I'll come from this direction, we'll both arrive at the same time, and surely we'll defeat this little person, Krishna. So when Krishna saw all the massive armies of both kingdoms assembled at Mathura city, he told Balaram, this is a very difficult situation. You hold them off for some time. I'm going to take the Yadu dynasty to another place so they're safe. So he had Vishvakarma very quickly create Dwaraka and mystically transferred all the Yadu dynasty members and settled them in their quarters and came back. And when he came back, he went onto the battlefield alone, and Kaliyavana was the first to rush forward to do combat with Krishna. So what did Krishna do? He ran. And he ran not so fast that Kaliyavana would become discouraged, but as fast as Kaliyavana went, he was out of reach of Kaliyavana, and kept running and running and running and running and running and running and ran into a cave. And Kaliyavana thought, ha, he's exhausted, I'll go and finish him off in this cave. You know what happened. There was somebody sleeping. He thought, Krishna's fallen asleep, he's so tired. He kicked the person. Get up and fight. But it was Mushukunda who had this benediction from the demigods who he had been assisting in some other fighting for such a long, 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 long day and night and night and day and day and night. He was relieved by Kartikeya. So when he was given relief, the demigods gave him whatever benediction you would like. He said, let me just sleep uninterrupted. I'm so tired. And if anybody interrupts me just by my seeing them, they'll be burnt to ashes. Well, that's a nice benediction. We can arrange for that one. So when Mushukunda opened his eyes and saw Kalyana, he was ashes instantly. Thus ended Kalyavana. But then, in the same cave was Krishna, who was effulgent, and the cave was luminous like daylight in the deep recesses of the cave. But because he was in this angry mood, important lesson, because he was in an angry mood, he didn't even recognize the Lord of his life. Until by the presence of Krishna, he gradually gathered his wits and recognized, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you've come here to give me your association. Because he had never seen Krishna, like Rukmini, had never seen Krishna. Kalyavana was a great devotee. And we may sometimes whine and complain, oh, I've never seen Krishna. But Mushukunda never saw Krishna either. Rukmini never saw Krishna either, so you know, whether the man's side or the lady's side, they never saw Krishna, but hearing the glories of Krishna, they became pure devotees of Krishna. Rukmini recognized him right away. Mushukunda didn't, because he was angry. Anger covers the consciousness of the soul. So, Krishna had Mushukunda kill Kalyavana, and Krishna had Bhima kill the king of Magadha. The king of Magadha was Jarasandha, and Jarasandha had enmity toward Krishna, well, in part because he was a demon, but also there was a specific reason. It goes way back, but the two daughters of Jarasandha were given as wives to Kamsa. Do you know how that happened? It's a very interesting story. One time, when Kamsa was going all over the place, just like beating up on people and tormenting people and harassing people, you know, there were terrorists long before these guys. He just was cruising and, you know, harassing people, and he would defeat other kings and bring them to the point of giving them an option. Either you surrender to me or I'll kill you. And I've already destroyed all of your armies, but you're left, so you can be my ally or you can be dead. Take your pick. Okay, we'll be your ally. And so he had many allies of other demoniac kings like himself. So one time he was on tour, as was Jarasandha. Only Jarasandha was kind of having like an elephant hunt, and he found this huge elephant that was named Kuvalyapida. And Kuvalyapida was chained with several chains because he was so big, but he was so strong, he just ripped out the chains, or the poles holding the chains, and ran away into the northerly direction, and Jarasandha was chasing after him. And he went into the camp where Kamsa was. And Kamsa was so strong, he just picked up Kuvalyapida and twirled him around and twirled him around and threw him 100 miles in the air and came crashing and landed on his head right at the camp of Jarasandha. And Jarasandha thought, wow, that was good. Whoever that was, I want to meet that person. Wow. So he went and found Kamsa and said, you did this? I have two gifts for you. Here's Kovalyapita. He's yours. And I'll give my two daughters in marriage for you to marry. So there was the, you know, family thing going on between Jarasandha and Kamsa. And when Kamsa was killed by Krishna, the two wives went back, Daddy!
Our husband has been killed. Please do something. Take revenge.
Jarasandha then declared, I will destroy this person who has killed your husband. Consider him dead. So he gathered his armies, went to Mathura, and challenged Krishna in a fight. Krishna said, don't worry, I'll just go and deal with this myself, and destroyed the entire army of Jarasandha and left him alone standing on the battlefield and said, you can go home now. Totally humiliated him. You're not even worth killing, just, you know, take a walk. So on his way back, Jarasandha was considering, better that he had killed me. It's dishonor is worse than death. But then his ministers were pumping him up, saying, no, Jarasandha, you just weren't prepared. It was just, you know, a quirk of fate, and you're so powerful. You can do it, Jarasandha. Get another army together and go back and do it again. I said, yeah, I'll go back and do it again. And it happened 17 times. He didn't get the message. It needed to happen. But devotees should be so determined, as Jarasandha was determined, to be successful in serving Krishna nicely, if at first you don't succeed, right? So on this 18th time, that was Kaliyavada coming from one direction and Jarasandha coming from the other direction. After Kaliyavada was finished, then Krishna went back to the battlefield. And when he went back to the battlefield, again, just as he had fled the field from... And by the way, Kshatriyas don't do that. It's a disgrace. You die or you kill the other party, but you don't run from the battlefield. He ran from the battlefield. And with Balaram. And they ran and ran and ran, and Jarasandha pursued and pursued, and they went up a mountain, and he couldn't find him anywhere. He thought, he must be hiding in a cave. He's afraid of me. So I'll burn the mountain. So he set the mountain on fire. Blazing, raging fire. And he thought, he's finished. He waited. The fire burned the whole mountain. Nothing stirred. Krishna's dead. But he wasn't dead. Krishna and Balaram just took a ride, jumping from the mountain, landed at the bottom of the mountain, and then they went back to Dwarka. So later, Krishna's in Dwarka. Much later, Krishna's in Dwarka. And he gets word that a messenger arrives. And the messenger says that Jarasandha has captured 20,000 kings and he's imprisoned them. And he's planning to make human sacrifices to the goddess Kali of all these kings. Krishna, please do something. Just at the same time, Narada arrived, said, after Krishna received Narada very nicely, while this messenger is still standing there waiting for Krishna's reply, Narada said that Yudhisthira Maharaj has decided that he wants to perform Rajasuya sacrifice, and he wants you to come and be the guest of honor. So, what did Krishna do? Krishna turned to Uddhava and said, Uddhava, what should I do? What would your advice be? That's the intimacy of Uddhava and Krishna. Uddhava, understanding Krishna's heart, said, when one performs Rajasuya Yajna, it should, all opposing kings that are known should be destroyed, if there are opposing kings. And there is one opposing king, and that's Jarasandha. So a method should be devised first, in sequence, first destroy Jarasandha, and then the Rajasuya Yajna. But it wouldn't go well if the Rajasuya Yajna and Jarasandha came with a big army, and it wouldn't be right. And moreover, I have a suggestion of how it can be done. And he suggested the whole plan. Jarasandha is known to be very magnanimous to the Brahmanas. So if you all, you, Bhima and Arjuna, he made the whole thing up. Just like that, sitting in Dwarka. Because he is so intimately connected with Krishna. He knew what Krishna's thoughts were. So Krishna accepted the plan. Ask for a charity and Bhima can kill me. That would be very nice. And then have the Rajasuya Yajna. So Krishna immediately accepted, Uddhava, you have the best of advice. So he relayed that message to the messenger. You can please inform Yudhisthira Maharaj. I will come soon. And the other messenger, I will address Jarasandha personally. Tell all the kings in a secret way. I'll relieve them of their misfortune. So Krishna went. I'm going to read a little bit of this, but what the Bhagavatam discusses the same thing, Mahabharata discusses the same thing. The Mahabharata version is slightly different, but it's detailed. Very nice. So Krishna decided to go visit Mathura. So he went, and when Krishna was there, and by this time it was Indraprastha. So he went to visit, and Yudhisthira was, well, he saw Krishna coming, because it wasn't so long ago that Krishna had left. So he was so happy. He ran from the palace and fell at Krishna's feet, and Krishna was accepting Yudhisthira as his elder cousin. And so Krishna offered his respects to Yudhisthira. And Yudhisthira invited him, please stay with us for several months. That was like one of the first things he said. But I didn't say, why did you come? He says, please stay with us for several months. So Krishna agreed. And again, these same reports were coming that Jarasandha was harassing and tormenting kings from all throughout the land because he was very, very powerful. So Yudhisthira was asked, Krishna asked him, what do you think should be done? You are very, very wise. And Yudhisthira said, we must destroy him. But he, you know, just to do with the ordinary army way would let us do this other way. So he proposed basically the same thing that Uddhava had said. And Krishna said, I was thinking the same thing. Very good suggestion. So when they went, it was disguised as Brahmanas. There's Bhima, there's Krishna and Arjuna. But he saw these big, powerful, football player looking guys, warriors, saying, I've never seen Brahmanas quite built like you three. But whatever it is, you must have come for some charity. Tell me what you would like. Would you like my kingdom? Would you like all my treasury? Tell me what you would like. No. What we would like is, let us have combat together. Oh. And may I ask who you are? You want combat with me? I think I can tell that mighty one over there, that's Bhima. He guessed. They removed their Brahmana renunciate attire and showed their identity and said, oh, I won't fight with Krishna. He's dishonest and a coward. And Arjuna, he's too small and he's younger than me. But that one over there, he's a good opponent. I'll be happy to oblige your request for charity. Choose your weapon. So they fought with clubs for some number of days, 28 days, something like that. Day and night and night and day and day and night. Like Krishna fighting with Jambavan, just like non-stop. And you know what happened. Krishna showed by taking a stick and bifurcating the stick, indicating how we should destroy Jarasandha, because Jarasandha was put in two halves, put into one. Long story. Put into one. So that was how the only way he could be destroyed, and he was destroyed. So Krishna gave that nice service to Bhima. And also mentioned is Shalva. I'll briefly describe the story with Shalva. Shalva was in the assembly of kings that were he was one of Shishupal's buddies. And Jarasandha and Dantavakra and Shishupal and Shalva. So he was one of the kings that when Krishna took Rukmini away and all the kings went chasing after, he was repelled. He was humiliated. So he decided, I want to take revenge. I've been humiliated. So he decided he would undergo austerities. You know what his austerity was? He ate dust, a little, only, as his foodstuff for 1 year. So if the prasadam at the feast is not so good sometimes, think of Shalva. That something got burned, or the chapati's a little hard, or something. Don't worry about it. Dust. A little bit. For a year. Worshipping Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva appeared and asked him, What is it that you want? What benediction do you want? He said, I want it. Special airplane, a vimana, that I can travel around and torment everybody. Strike fear and pain into the heart of everybody. So Lord Shiva said, I can arrange that. He called for Maya Dhanava and had him make this vimana for him. In the first place, Shalva went. Was Mathura with all of his armies and was showering torrents of weapons down upon the city of Mathura. So the short of it is, Pradyumna first was the Yadu dynasty. He wanted to destroy the whole Yadu dynasty. So Pradyumna was one of Krishna's sons. Pradyumna was fighting, and Shalva struck him with one of his mystical weapons, and Pradyumna fell to the ground unconscious. And the chariot driver of Pradyumna thought he was dead. So just to take him to a place of safety and see if he was even alive, he drove the chariot off the battlefield. And when Pradyumna regained his consciousness, he was surprised to find where he was. And he asked the chariot driver what happened. The chariot driver told him, and he scolded him severely. Why have you done this? Immediately take me back to the battlefield. So meanwhile, other soldiers were fighting with Shalva in big raging battle, and so Krishna personally came, and Krishna destroyed the Vimana, and Krishna destroyed Shalva with his Sudarshan Chakra. But mentioned here specifically, Krishna was giving the opportunity of his own devotees to fight with Shalva, because Krishna likes doing that. Krishna likes giving credit to his devotee. Exactly as we find in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna showed to the universal form that the soldiers on the battlefield were already destroyed by Krishna's plan. And he just let Arjuna know, if you like, you can be my instrument. And if you're not going to be my instrument, that's okay. They're destroyed anyways by my plan. So Bhakta Vatsala. This is Uddhava's appreciation of one of the features of how Krishna likes to give credit to his devotees. He likes to bring attention and glory and honor to his devotees. Even as he who's doing the act, he promised, and he was delivering on his promise, that he would relieve the earth of the burden of demoniac kings. If Krishna defeated Jarasandha 17 times, did he need somebody else to take care of him? So, I'm going to read from Mahabharata, Krishna Dharma's translation, of the killing of Jarasandha. It's very nice. The intrigue is fantastic. His writing style is excellent also. So Krishna is in Dwarka. He had been in Indraprastha, and he had returned, and everyone was very happy. Now he's back in Dwarka with all of his relatives. During the coming months, he heard about the Pandavas' incomparable assembly hall. He also heard that Subhadra's first son had been born, and that they had named him Abhimanyu. Krishna was joyful to hear that the Pandavas were flourishing, and he began to desire to see them again. Each day, Krishna went to the Siddharma assembly hall and met with the citizens. Vishvakarma, the architect of the gods, had constructed this hall, and it had the special quality of freeing those who entered it from the six kinds of material suffering: hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. When Krishna entered the hall, he would bow down before King Ugrasena, then take his seat on a bejeweled golden throne. Although not Dwarka's king, Krishna was nevertheless respected as the most important person present. The city's inhabitants understood his divine status. They regarded him as their natural leader, especially after he had personally deposed of the previous king, Kamsa, Ugrasena's cruel son, and freed them from his reign of terror. Once everyone was settled in the hall, Jesters, dancers, and musicians were called out to entertain the Yadus. Brahmins recited Vedic hymns or chanted hymns and prayers, and one could hear the sounds of mridangas, drums, flutes, and bells around the hall, as well as blasts from numerous conch shells. Krishna and Balaram enjoyed the various performances, and they resembled the sun and moon amid so many shining planets. One day, after Krishna had received the news of the opening of the Maya Sabha, that's the Indraprastha palace that Mayadhanava had created for them, for the Pandavas, a stranger arrived at the Sudharma hall. Krishna gave him permission to enter, and he stepped forward with folded palms. The man introduced himself as a king from a distant territory, one that Jarasandha had conquered. He explained how the Magadha king had become more and more aggressive, how he imprisoned the thousands of kings he conquered, and how he kept them in a wretched condition until he was ready to kill them. He had managed to escape and had come as a messenger on the other king's behalf. O Krishna, O Unlimited One, we beg you to deliver us from our miserable condition. Jarasandha is as powerful as 10,000 elephants. He has therefore been able to imprison us just like a lion captures a flock of sheep. You are the most powerful person and are always kindly disposed to those who seek your shelter. Therefore, please act for our good fortune. He's reading a letter composed by the imprisoned kings. It was well known that Krishna had fought and defeated Jarasandha many times, but the evil monarch had somehow escaped with his life. Jarasandha hated Krishna for his killing of Kamsa, who is both Jarasandha's friend and his son-in-law. In an attempt to avenge Kamsa, Jarasandha had marched against the Yadus again and again at the front of a vast army, but each time his army had been totally destroyed, and he had returned in shame to his kingdom to rebuild his forces, still burning with hatred for Krishna. Krishna looked compassionately at the messenger. As he was about to reply, Narada Rishi suddenly entered the hall. Narada's amazing. Just at the right time, in the right place, with the right message. The sage came before Krishna, who immediately rose with his ministers to offer his heartfelt obeisances. Krishna offered a seat and personally worshipped him with argya. He then said, "Oh, sage among the gods, it is fortune indeed that we see you here today. You are able to travel freely throughout the world, and therefore you know everything. Please tell us how the Pandavas are faring at present, and what are Yudhisthira's plans?" Krishna's question was significant. By his mystic power, he understood that Yudhisthira was desiring to perform Rajasuya sacrifice, which would entail his having to conquer Jarasandha. Narada replied, "My dear Lord, I know that nothing is beyond your knowledge, yet still you act like an ordinary man and question me. I can therefore tell you that Yudhisthira is as well established in his kingdom as Indra is in his. He now desires to perform the great Rajasuya sacrifice, and he is making the necessary preparations. Even now he is praying that you will go to Indraprastha and assist him. Indeed, he has asked me to come and invite you." Krishna thanked Narada for the information and turned to his chief advisor, Uddhava. "What should be done?" Uddhava replied, "It seems that you can achieve two things at once. By going to Indraprastha, you will both enable your cousin to perform the sacrifice and bring about Jarasandha's destruction. Jarasandha has now amassed such a large army that the only way we can defeat him is in a one-on-one encounter. Only one person is capable of facing him hand-to-hand combat. Bhima. If Bhima approaches Jarasandha disguised as a Brahmin, then he can beg from him a fight. Jarasandha is famous for never refusing a Brahmin's request. My dear Krishna, you should accompany Bhima to Magadha. He will certainly be successful in the fight if you are there to guide him. Perfect plan. The assembly voiced their approval. Yadus had already been planning how to kill the belligerent Jarasandha. This seemed like a good solution. Thus Krishna agreed to go to Indraprastha. Reassuring the imprisoned king's messenger, he took permission from King Ugrasena and his father Vasudeva to depart, then rose and left the assembly. So he's traveling, skip some of those paragraphs. Yudhisthira comes running from the city, crying aloud in great joy. The festivities of receiving Krishna. After Krishna had rested and refreshed himself, and his family had been settled, Yudhisthira approached him to discuss the Rajasuya. My dear king, the Bhagavatam's narration is different. It says that Krishna was there for a couple of months, and then Yudhisthira raised this question. Anyway, I desire to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, but I wonder if I shall be successful. Please tell me what is best for me. I know you will never speak out of any motivation other than for my welfare. Therefore, I depend entirely upon your words in deciding my course of action. Yudhisthira sat in the hall surrounded by his brothers. An iridescent glow from thousands of celestial gems set in the walls lit up their faces as they looked at Krishna, awaiting his advice. In the expectant silence of the hall, the soft murmur of Brahmins chanting hymns could be heard drifting in from nearby temples. Krishna sat peacefully with his hands in his lap. There's a beautiful painting of this. Krishna's making this plan. Very beautiful painting, sitting with the Pandavas in a royal assembly. Krishna then listed the names of the many kings subservient to Jarasandha. They were all Krishna's enemies, and many of them had been defeated by him and Balaram in various battles over the years. Now they had come together under Jarasandha's leadership. With these kings united, their armies would be impossible to defeat. What do you think should be done, O descendant of Kuru? How will you overpower Jarasandha? Bhima leaped to his feet. It would not be wise to send out an army to oppose Jarasandha in his own province. We should challenge him to single combat. I have the strength to defeat him, and you, Krishna, are expert in policy. Arjun always brings victory. Therefore, let the three of us go to Magadha and challenge him. I am confident of success. Krishna replied, "This is my thought also. Indeed, the wise Uddhava advised me in the same way. I, for one, am prepared to accompany Bhima and Arjuna to Magadha to bring about the sinful Jarasandha's death." Yudhisthira was uncertain. He moved uneasily on his throne. "How can I allow you to go on my behalf?" he asked. "How too can I risk the lives of Bhima and Arjuna? They are my eyes and you are my mind, O Krishna. Bereft of any of you, I could not possibly continue to live. Do not go. I think that even Yamaraj would not be able to face Jarasandha. Pray, desist from this determination to fight with him. I shall give up my desire to perform Rajasuya. It seems an impossible goal. Yudhisthira's voice was pleading. His love for Krishna overpowered any thought of Krishna's divinity and unassailable position. Arjuna then spoke. We are born in a race famous for its valor and prowess. How can we, like weak men, shrink back in fear of an enemy? We are Kshatriyas. Our duty is to fight and, if necessary, lay down our lives in battle. There can be no higher act for us than to defy Jarasandha and try to rescue the imprisoned kings. If we do not go, men shall revile us as worthless. Such dishonor will be worse than death. Krishna agreed. Arjuna has shown the mood of one born in the Bharat race. We do not know when death will overtake us, nor have we heard that immortality has been obtained by desisting from battle. The wise have decreed that one should, by taking recourse in strength and policy, confront his enemies. Let us therefore encounter Jarasandha. Either we kill him or, being ourselves killed, ascend to heaven. Okay. Yudhisthira then became curious to know more of Jarasandha's history. Krishna explained that he had been born to King Brihadratha, a powerful ruler of Magadha, when a rishi had blessed the king to have a son. The rishi had given Brihadratha a charmed mango to give to the senior queen, but the king divided it into two, so both of his queens might conceive. But the wives gave birth to only half a child. Yuck. The sorrowing queens threw the two halves into the forest, where a Rakshasa woman named Jara had picked them up. She put them together, and the child suddenly came to life with a roar. Jara returned the baby to the king, who named him Jarasandha, or one who was joined by Jara. Krishna added, the time has now come to destroy this Jarasandha. Without a doubt, Bhima will defeat him in single combat. Jarasandha will not refuse to fight. Therefore, O King, grant us your permission to depart. Yudhisthira assented to Krishna's desire. Seeing your mind set upon this purpose, O Keshava, I consider Jarasandha already killed. And all the imprisoned kings released, you'll certainly lead Bhima and Arjuna to victory over the monarch. O Krishna, what cannot be accomplished for one who has you as his guide? So they traveled east for many days. They came to his province, to his capital. Describes the main gate and the hills and the surrounding scene. And at the foot of the hill was a massive drum made from the skin of a Rakshasa that Jarasandha had slain. Nice little monument entering the city. Having been struck once, the drum would vibrate for a full month. And Jarasandha had it continually sounded to warn anyone who even thought of attacking the city. Arjuna and Krishna smashed the drum to pieces. Cool. Climbing down the hill, they clambered over the wall surrounding the city to gain entrance. The guards stood back in surprise as the three apparent Brahmins made their unusual entrance. Bhima then led them along the streets toward the king's palace. They saw numerous attractive, well-stocked shops. As they walked past the flower vendors, they snatched garlands and put them on. They strode into Jarasandha's palace and made their way to the central courtyard where the king was performing a sacrifice. Girivraja's learned brahmanas had been witnessing fearful omens portending calamity. Thus they had advised the king to fast and perform sacrifice to ward off evil. As Jarasandha sat before the blazing fire, he saw three powerful men dressed as snatakas, renunciates, and adorned with garlands approaching him. Accepting them as Brahmins, he immediately rose to greet them, saying, "You are welcome." Krishna told the king that his two friends were observing a vow and would not speak until midnight. At that time, they would tell him the purpose for their visit. Krishna knew that the king had himself made a vow that he would give to any Brahmin whatever he asked, even if it came after, even if he came at midnight. Jarasandha had them quartered in his palace, and he would visit them at midnight that night. Jarasandha entered the room and worshipped the three guests with proper ceremonies, offering them gifts and of milk-bearing cows. But his guest refused his worship and gifts. Krishna said, "O king, we have come seeking a special kind of charity from you, who are famous for giving Brahmins whatever they want. For a great man, there's no charity that cannot be given. Even the body may be sacrificed for a proper cause, therefore, please grant our request." Jarasandha looked at them closely, with their colorful robes and bright garlands. They did not look like any Brahmins he had ever seen. But as they had come to him in that guise and were asking charity, he could not refuse. He said, "I will give you whatever you may ask. However, you three do not appear to be Brahmins, dressed as you are and decorated with flowers. Your long arms, smeared with fragrant sandal paste, resemble tree trunks. Your hands carry scars from a bowstring. You tore down the peak of the Chaityaka hill and entered the city as enemies do, avoiding the gate. You have also refused my worship. Such behavior befits an enemy. I think you are Kshatriyas. Tell me honestly, for truth is the ornament even of kings." Krishna returned the king's icy stare with a smile. "Your observations are accurate. We are not Brahmins. The snataka vow may be followed by Kshatriyas as well as Brahmanas. And you have surmised correctly that we are enemies. Thus we have entered your city violently and declined your worship. We have come to beg from you a duel." Jarasandha was surprised. "I do not recall ever having done you any harm. Indeed, I'm innocent of any crime. One who assails an innocent man receives sinful reaction, which will send him to hell. I always observe the duties of my order, protecting the people and rendering them no harm. Why do you come to see me as an enemy?" Angry, Krishna replied, "O king, we represent one who desires to uphold the dignity of the royal line and establish religion throughout the world. How do you consider yourself religious when you have imprisoned so many kings? You even intend to offer them as human sacrifice to Rudra. To treat these kings as if they were beasts who could do no such thing except someone as sinful as you. You will certainly reap the results of your sinful acts, for the law of karma is infallible. Although you consider yourself without an equal, we will crush your pride. We wish to free the captive kings. Know me to be Krishna, and these two to be Bhima and Arjuna. Follow now your Kshatriya duty and fight with us today. Either free the kings or go to Yamaraj's abode. Jarasandha laughed. I should have guessed. My old enemy Krishna come in disguise to try to kill me after failing so many times. What sin have I committed by capturing the kings for Shiva's pleasure? I defeated all of them fairly in battle. Therefore, it is my prerogative to do with them whatever I please. I will not release them out of fear of you or these other two. I will fight either by placing my troops in battle array or by standing alone against the three of you. Or, if you prefer, I will fight whichever one of you most desires death at my hands. Krishna looked at his two friends. It's your choice, Jarasandha. Select any one of us for single combat and let that settle our dispute. Jarasandha preferred to fight with Bhima. He considered Krishna and Arjuna no match for his strength. Only Bhima seemed powerful enough. Bhima smiled grimly and clenched his fist. He furrowed his brows and glared at Jarasandha. They agreed to meet at sunrise, and the king left to make preparations for the fight. We know the outcome, I guess. Let's see how much further it goes. Okay, we're not there. Jarasandha and the Brahmins had Brahmins utter auspicious Vedic hymns over him, and he smeared his body with sacred ointments that had been offered to the gods. He then placed his son upon the throne and bound his hair in a tight knot. Removing his royal robes, he donned only a loincloth. As the sun rose, he went out of the city along with Bhima, for whom Krishna had performed the propitiatory ceremonies to invoke the gods. The king had two massive clubs fetched from his armory. The two fighters took hold of the clubs and entered a large, roped-off arena just outside the city gates. They appeared like two mighty lions staring at each other in fury. At the signal given by a Brahmin, they rushed at each other, shaking the earth with their steps. The two powerful heroes roared as they came together. They each swung huge blows, creating fearful sounds and a shower of sparks as their maces met. Wheeling and dodging, they resembled two dancers on a stage. Onlookers were dazzled by their expertise with the club. They smashed one another with all their strength, but neither gave way. Each was as powerful as 10,000 elephants, and they merely laughed as the mace struck them. Soon both of the clubs were shattered, and they threw them aside, continuing the fight with their bare hands. They seized each other's necks and dragged one another around the arena. Each looked for an opportunity to throw his opponent down. Bhima grabbed his enemy and tried to crush him with his arms. Jarasandha broke free and swung out his leg, trying to unbalance Bhima. Sometimes they raised their arms, sometimes they dropped them, sometimes held them close. By now a large crowd had formed around the arena. Citizens of every class came to see the fight, and they gasped in astonishment as the two men grappled. The sound coming from the arena resembled the claps of thunder or a falling cliff. The earth shook violently as they rolled about, locked together. Neither showed any sign of fatigue as the fight continued throughout the day and up until the sunset. As darkness fell, the fight was stopped until the next morning. Jarasandha invited Bhima and his two friends back to his palace and entertained them as our guests. Even though they were enemies, Jarasandha felt duty-bound to respect them. Next morning, the fight resumed. Again, it continued for the entire day. Again, the night fell. 28 days, the fighting went on. Bhima began to feel it would never end. There seemed to be no way to overpower Jarasandha. The king, too, felt respect for his opponent. Jarasandha had never before been equaled in single combat, but it appeared that the Pandavas were invincible. On the 28th day, Krishna considered how Bhima might end the fight. Since Jarasandha had been joined at birth by the Rakshasi, Krishna knew that he would be weak along that joint. Bhima should tear him into two. When Bhima was able to see him, Krishna picked up a twig and split it right down the middle. Bhima took the hint. Finding an opportunity, he threw Jarasandha to the ground and stood on one of his legs. Then he held the other leg and pushed it forward. With a tremendous roar, he tore Jarasandha in two. The king died with a scream that echoed throughout the entire city. The citizens were shocked by the cry, and they rushed to see what had happened. They found Bhima standing over the two halves of the slain monarch. As all the citizens cried out, "Alas!" Krishna and Arjuna came forward to embrace Bhima. The three of them went back to the city and ordered Jarasandha's son Jayat Sena to release the imprisoned kings from the mountain fortress where they were held. The kings came down to the city and offered their respects and to worship Krishna. Krishna and the two Pandavas sat within Jarasandha's palace. All of the many thousands of captive kings bowed before them. On behalf of all of them, one king addressed Krishna. Words of praise. Krishna accepted their worship and arranged for them to be given food and clothing. He then told them to return to their kingdoms and accept Yudhisthira as the world's emperor. Soon the Pandavas would perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and they should all attend. Jayatsena also agreed to accept Yudhisthira's authority, and after being properly installed by Krishna as the king of Magadha, he arranged transport back to Indraprastha for Krishna and the Pandavas. Upon their arrival, Krishna went to Yudhisthira and said, "O best of kings, by good fortune, Jarasandha has been killed, and the imprisoned kings set free. Both Bhima and Arjuna are unharmed." Yudhisthira joyfully embraced his two younger brothers and Krishna. "By your grace, dear Krishna, anything can be achieved. Indeed, it is only by your power that anyone else can exhibit power. We are kings and rulers only as long as you permit. And although you are the unlimited supreme, devoid of mundane desire and hatred, you still appear as an ordinary human being." Krishna smiled and asked Yudhisthira for permission to depart. Yudhisthira then set a date to begin the Rajasuya, and Krishna agreed to return at that time. First, however, the Pandavas would have to subjugate the other monarchs on the earth. Having bade farewell to Kunti and Draupadi, Krishna mounted his chariot and headed back to Dwarka. Here's the end of the chapter. After Krishna had departed, Arjuna said to Yudhisthira, "O king, I possess the Gandiva bow and inexhaustible quivers of arrows, as well as prowess to use them in your service. I would like to go out and make the kings of the world pay you tribute. Allow me to go north and conquer all those kingdoms." Yudhisthira replied, "You have my permission, O Dhananjaya. Leave on the auspicious day after gaining the Brahmin's blessings. You will doubtlessly gain victory over all." Arjuna gathered a large number of troops and soon left for the north. Bhima surrounded by a similar number of men, went east, and Sahadeva went south, and Nakula west. Last paragraph of the chapter. Yudhisthira was thrilled at the prospect of soon being able to perform the Rajasuya. So many things would thus be achieved. His noble father would be raised to the highest heaven. The world would be placed firmly on the path of religion. And most of all, Krishna would be honored above all as the Supreme Person. Soon, the king was consulting with Domya and the other exalted Brahmins in his kingdom as to the preparations for the sacrifice, and Vyasadeva arrived to further advise the king. End of chapter. The killing of the mighty Jarasandha. Mahabharata tonight is very nice. Huh? Anything? Any comments or questions or anything?
I was thinking about when you said before you read the whole story, you were talking how, okay, so Krishna gave Bhima this nice service of killing Jarasandha. And I was thinking to myself, wow, but he was exhausted in the process. He had to fight for so many days, and, you know, it was seemed like it was going to be an endless battle. And he didn't know how he was going to do it. He had to go through so much difficulty first. But then ultimately, of course, there was victory. Krishna gave him the victory. But anyway, I was thinking of how in our daily lives and our services to Krishna, Krishna's given us so many nice services, yes, but at the same time, many struggles exist in those services.
Yeah.
And we have to find a way, like he did, to remain steady and fixed and realize that Krishna's there with us, helping us through.
Nice thought.
Yeah, it was.
We don't have to fight Jarasandha.
No. Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes it feels like that. And our capacity is so small.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yes, wasn't there a son of Jarasandha named Sahadev? Or was that somebody else?
I don't know. I could look it up. But
I just... It could be somebody else. I just thought there was a Sahadev, who was a son of Jarasandha.
Well, while we're going on, I'll just put those two words, Jarasandha and Sahadev, that comes up.
You mentioned one son was a Jetta Khan or something like that, but I thought there was
Jayat Sena.
Jayat Sena. Yeah, I thought there was also a Sahadev involved somewhere in that story. Yeah. I could be wrong. It could be another demon son.
Jarasandha and Sahadev. Zero.
Must be someone else.
Oh, yeah. That's just from Mahabharata. Anyway, this is Krishna Dharma's version, so it's not like he's got everything in it. Anything else?
Maharaj, when we see discrepancies between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, so my understanding is we accept the version of the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
So, what is a proper way to read the Mahabharata and assimilate its messages? Because it's very nice.
Very nice.
There's so many wonderful teachings there. But also, it appears that we have to be very careful because...
Yeah, we have to be careful. I get a whole long thing on this recently. And Ridhananda Maharaj recently visited in St. Louis. He's doing a little tour here and there. And the same, he brought up the subject, he's writing a book on one must be very careful where one takes one's information. Because in the course of his translating Mahabharata, he came to know that there's many translations of Mahabharata.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are bona fide, what to speak of between Mahabharata and Bhagavatam, some are bona fide and some aren't bona fide. And, you know, how do you know what's bona fide and what's not bona fide? And you can't go and ask a scholar. Because, you know, they'll say whatever their leaning is, and someone else will say whatever their leaning is, and someone else will say whatever their leaning is. And you can't find out that way. But one has to be very careful. But the assuming one has been careful, there are just like there's many versions of Ramayana. Some are bona fide and some are not bona fide. And most are not bona fide and some are bona fide. So while being careful, there's very wonderful moral instruction. But especially when we can match the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam to that Mahabharata story, here's one very simple one. According to Mahabharata, at the end, after Krishna leaves, the Pandavas had to see hell before they ascended to heaven. And the understanding is because each of them had made some mistakes, and the message is one is responsible for your mistakes. Even you may be such an elevated personality. So, you know, don't think that because I'm this good person, I won't have to be responsible for my sinful activities. Or even... the message is, how do we read Mahabharata? It's a, you know, truth prevails or virtue prevails against evil or falsity. So stay on the side of truth and stay on the side of virtue. Largely that's, and there's details of, okay, what's virtue? What about this situation? Is this virtuous or is that virtuous? Like, you know, Arjuna's dilemma at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, is this to be done or is that to be done? I'm uncertain. Mm. As we find in our lives, here's a circumstance, is this to be done or is that to be done? So it's some guidelines of what are standards by which something is to be done. That's very helpful, provided one has done the first part of being very careful with which version you're taking.
So Maharaj, is it fair to say that the relationship between Mahabharata and Bhagavatam is something similar to Varnashram Dharma and pure spirituality?
Or it's at least, you know, virtue and Shuddhasattva. Sattva and Shuddhasattva. Primarily. Because there's information in Varnashram in the Bhagavatam, and there's discussion about Shuddhasattva, unalloyed service to Krishna, also in Mahabharata. Anything else?
Can you describe about the relationship between Krishna and Uddhava a little bit more?
It's very confidential. I'll tell you later. Well, a common explanation that's presented is outside of Vrindavan, the most confidential devotee of Krishna was Uddhava. And that means even Arjuna, who is his dearmost friend, even outside of Vrindavan, the most confidential devotee, the most qualified devotee, is Uddhava. And that's confirmed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and of all that search that Narada, who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord, you know, the conclusion is Uddhava. But then, it's the residents of Vrindavan who are the most confidential, or the most intimate, the most recipients of the greatest mercy of Krishna. But outside of Vrindavan is Uddhava. And the intimacy with Uddhava was shown when Krishna chose to send Uddhava with his letter, ostensibly to pacify the gopis, but more to show Uddhava, to give him that experience of the kind of love that exists in Vrindavan. And when he saw the kind of love that exists in Vrindavan, he was overwhelmed. He who is the most elevated of all the associates of Krishna outside of Vrindavan. So he took the role of Krishna's advisor, but he did so by understanding Krishna's heart. It wasn't by being a Chanakya pundit or something, like, you know, very intuitive and very wise. He knew Krishna's heart. And who can know Krishna's heart unless Krishna discloses his heart? But that's the intimacy that Uddhava has with Krishna. In this section, when Vidura speaks, there's lots of, he's asking this one, that one, how are they doing? When it's Uddhava's turn to speak, he can't speak. And it's not just, he's experiencing ecstatic symptoms, which include his voice being choked up so he can't speak. But in the commentary, Prabhupada says that he had actually gone to Krishna. His consciousness was so absorbed in Krishna that he was with Krishna in Krishna Loka. And he was wanting to come back to this realm to do some service for Vidura. But he was so attached to Krishna he couldn't. I mean, what can you say about Uddhava? How elevated it is. And more elevated is all the residents of Vrindavan. Ask Uddhava, that's what he'll tell you. So that's his relationship with Krishna. He was apparently both his friend, but, you know, serving as his friend as a relationship of a superior friend. That thus he would advise him. And Krishna liked, what should I do now, Uddhava? You always give the best of advice. Tell me what I should do in this circumstance. And you didn't get, you know, mental about it. Oh, Krishna, why are you doing this? You're the Supreme Personality. You shouldn't ask me this. This is wrong. You would give him advice. Knowing what Krishna wanted. Incredible. There's a very beautiful description in Brihad Bhagavatamrita when Narada gets to Dwarka. And he wants to see the Yadus, and the Yadus say, no, it's not us, it's Uddhava, and he meets Uddhava. And Uddhava's devastated. You know, he has these, he's so elevated, but he has these seemingly like, you know, in our language, like depressed states, very sorrowful states. Because, you know, he's unable to help Krishna. Krishna was lost in a swoon of separation from Vrindavan. And there was nothing that Uddhava could do. He was feeling just terrible. There's nothing I can do. And useless. He wants so much to serve Krishna. And normally he knows what to do to serve Krishna. But he doesn't experience or look upon those states of feeling separation or feeling pained. He describes this in a number of verses in this chapter. He's feeling great pain at the pastimes of Krishna. And the pain that he feels is twofold. It's a pain for him that ordinary people consider Krishna to be ordinary. It pains him very much. Because he performs pastimes that seem like he's ordinary. He takes birth in a prison house. And then he asks that he can be taken to the other side of the Jamuna River because he's afraid of Kamsa. And when he comes back and sees Vasudeva and Devaki, like a ordinary being, he apologizes profusely. Please forgive me. I was unable to serve you properly because I was afraid of Kamsa. And when he does these pastimes, it gives me great pain. It's wonderful. But for him, it gives him great pain. He has such a feeling for Krishna that when ordinary people see him as an ordinary person, it's, you know, they're missing and they're offending. So that's what he's expressing to Vidura. Another pain is, and now we don't have his association anymore. That's, you know, a distinction between Arjuna's relationship with Krishna and Vidura's, or Uddhava's relationship with Krishna. When Arjuna is remembering Krishna, he regains his enthusiasm. And as Uddhava is remembering Krishna, his consciousness is so absorbed in Krishna that one would think that should relieve his pain of separation. But his mood is such, his vipralambha bhava is such that as he thinks more intensely about Krishna, he's feeling more the separation of Krishna.
understand that.
It's a transcendental emotion. And so as he's feeling more the separation of Krishna, it's like the gopis. He's thinking more about Krishna. And he's thinking more about Krishna, he's feeling more the separation of Krishna. Up to the point, you know, it just escalates and escalates and escalates, and like he's going mad. That's your question, his relationship with Krishna. Very confidential. But you ask. Okay, it's late. That reading of Mahabharata was nice, but it took some time, so it's after 9 o'clock. We're going to end.
Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.